accession number 19602.
The 21st of July 1999, Colonel John McGregor interviewing Henry Ellis. Henry, where and when were you born?
I was born on the 15th of February 1932.
Where?
Dundee.
Yes, now I see on your sheet that you had national service in due course and that you were posted to the 1st Battalion in 1952. Would you tell me, please, what did you have a choice as a national serviceman, which regiment you served in?
I wanted to go into engineers first, because I was an engineer by profession. But being a piper, and already in the TA, I was automatically sent in. But I enjoyed every minute. I wouldn't have missed it, because being an engineer, I thought, would be pretty colourless. So maybe more money, but rather colourless. Colourless, you know.
And which DA battalion were you?
The 4th, 5th in Dundee. Yeah.
Mm. Now then, would you carry on from there and tell me how you where you went to as a national serviceman for your training and how you what you thought about training?
Well, I went up to, I was called up to Queen's Barracks, November 52, and went up there, did 10 weeks training. And then I thought I was going to be going to Korea, but it didn't transpire because the peace was signed. Then the battalion arrived leaving Korea, were redirected to Kenya, and I joined them there at 53.
When you say redirected, where was the battalion, where it reached before it was redirected?
Well, this is rather hearsay and my say, but I believe that, on my point, but I think that they were coming going through the canal when they got the signal that the Mau Mau uprising had broken out. The fire on the Queen's Lodge, that was the start of it. This was significant, firing on the Queen's Lodge, the Royal Lodge in Kenya. And if they did that, then they were hitting at the establishment. So I joined them then.
I see. Now, going back just a little way, would you tell us something about your training? What sort of training you had when you first joined that made you a soldier?
Well, I did my 10 weeks infantry training and I did quite well. I wasn't the best soldier going, but I did quite well. And it was a Sergeant Howie. This Queen Barracks. This was at Queen Barracks, right. And it was quite a good training and, you know, it disciplined you and it made you learn to use the infantry weapons of the time. Although I never did learn to use a pistol. I've always wished I'd done. Well, the company pipers got pistols, you see. And I couldn't, but I would have learned later. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was rather strict. Your identity was taken away with you for 10 weeks. You were working as a team. Then, after 10 weeks, then you were. I was staying in the barracks. I was in the barracks, the small pipe band in the barracks. I got managed to get into that because I was quite a good piper. And it wasn't officially supposed to be there, but the idea was that you had a job, maybe taking meat at the Marie Quarters or cleaning the square, and had this small band that played drafts away to Korea and Kenya, places like that, you know. So the pipe corporal heard me playing and he said to the sergeant, he's a good piper. I said, thank goodness. He's a terrible infantryman. They probably say that about everybody, you know. And it was quite enjoyable. And then so I was ensconced in the small band. I thought, this is going to be me now for 2 years because I could get home to Dundee at the weekend as a permanent pass, you know. And then I went down one night to get the newspaper and here the Kenya had broken out. But I had no idea that I was going to be sent to Kenya. And the colonel came round one day, this is his own Queen's Barracks, came round and we were practicing in the billiard room. And he stood up and he said, I'm going to send you to Kenya to get your knees brown, Ellis. So I'm going to send you to Kenya to get your knees brown. And I said, oh. I said, oh, but I've only got about 90 months to go. He said, they're needing good pipers. He said, we'll send you out to reinforce the band. So I was sent home on embarkation leave. then we went out on the Charlton Star, a very ancient liner, you know, troop ship, and we were around in Mombasa. Travelled up in the train from Mombasa to join the 1st Battalion.
The 1st Battalion?
The Black Watch.
Been then in Kenya?
In Kenya, yes. Thika was the first place I arrived at. That was HQ Company. And I was flown up to join, I forget the number of the company at the time, but they were having a dinner dance, and I was flown up in a small plane that carried the mail, forget the name, to join one of the companies, I'm not sure. And they were taking over from the Northumberlands. And then my career went around Kenya with the pipe band from then. Is there anything now that you want me to explain? No. Mm-hmm. Now we moved about the pipes, and then I joined the pipes and drums. For a time I had company pipers, and then they decided the pipes and drums would be a fighting platoon rather than the traditional one. So we moved round the companies, we'd pitch our tents, help them out with a patrol, do a guard for them, beat retreat in Highland dancing, then we'd uplift our tents, move to another company, get ensconced again, do the same thing again. And then we moved once into Nairobi to do an operation from all the troops called Operation Anvil. It was to winkle, hammer out all the Mau Mau hiding in the town, winkle them all out, you see. So we went down to join the whole battalion, moved into Nairobi to do this Operation Anvil. And then we moved back up again. I think it's when I came back again, back to Thika, Kenya, that there was a skirmish down the road, just in a thicket, sort of valley with a thicket. A gang of Mau Mau had been hiding there. And it was Earl Wavell's son, Major Wavell, who got us all. The siren went in the camp. No bugle, of course, the siren. And he got us all around and he said, right, we're moving down here now. And when you see anybody, a black, so Samami, halt. If he doesn't halt, shoot him. That's what he said, you know. So we all moved down there. And we encircled this valley. It was a railway track. We were all around the railway track. And we watched Major Wavell going in with all... Actually, they were just blokes working down the camp. With the Nafi. But soldiers were helping him. He took all these guys in. And we saw them being wounded. When the guy came up with the rations along the track, keeping their heads down, I said, what happened? He said, Major Wavell had been killed. Oh, it's so disconcerting, you know. Such a soldier going right through the war, lost an arm. But we had to keep going. And so eventually we're out at this gun. But some of them had escaped. They knew of a tunnel that we didn't know of under the railway. So when we went down to the thicket, you'd see that some of them had been firing on the same bodies for ages, hanging in trees. But these other guys had moved out and went back to camp. And I didn't meet anything else again for a while. We just did pipes and drums. We went to Zanzibar, pipes and drums, at the request of the Sultan to play at his birthday celebrations. And it was three days on the yacht outside him. Had a marvellous time on the island, you know, just pipes and drums and drinking. and went back and then into combat again. And then we moved up and there was two or three skirmishes. They weren't very significant, you know, just call-outs. And then, where was it? We went to some place, at Thompson's Fall. We were up there for a bit. And Gilgil, we went to, where one night there was a call out, and I was on the standby section. And the drum major Roy D, is well known, he died just recently there, he came to tell us, right, the standby section on the truck. And we went way down. With a bit of apprehension, of course, because I was a young chap, you know. But I was in among career veterans, so I wasn't so frightened as I would normally be. We got down there, we were too late. The Mau Mau had massacred a whole village. It's pitiful to see that, you know. These children, their hands hacked off to take jotters out of school jotters, because that was significant of the British influence. They did anything to destroy that. women opened up and the baby's taken an umbilical cord dragged along. I was absolutely shocked. So we went into the schoolhouse and the district commissioner came in. I remember him putting his foot on a form and he said, "You see what these people do to their own kind? It's terrible." And I was really sad about it. And that was a massacre. I forget what that was called, that massacre. But I remember it was a Larry massacre, but I think it was there before we went out. A Larry massacre initiated this. But we went back to camp and told me, "How'd you get on?" I told him, "It's terrible. You're old." There was one woman saved. She was saved because she had accommodated the men. So she saved her life. And the district commissioner was wild about that. And he hit her. He says, "You know what she's done? She's allowed these men to make love to her, to save her life." And I thought, if I was a woman, would I not do that myself? You know? And we moved on. There's different skirmishes. We moved on in there. I was sorry to leave the battalion, you know.
You say you left the battalion.
Well, I had to go home. They came and told me. I was actually going on a 7-day patrol. And the drum major says, "Right, you get some grenades and prime them." I had never done it since I was at Queen's Barracks, but I thought I was going to start and prime the grenades, you know. Put them on the pouches. And one of the guys went down to read detail, and he says, "Ellis, you're due home, you're going tonight to Guild to Nairobi tomorrow, and then you're flying out to Kenya from Kenya on Saturday to the UK." So I told the drummer, and he said, "Oh, no, no." He says, "No, no, you're going with the patrol. You're trying to get out." I said, "I'm not trying to get out, it's all detail." So he went and read it. He says, "That's you, you're finished." But it was
Why was that?
Well, that was National Service up. Well, you see, they kept the roll. They had to keep you on the roll.
But you have to say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry, yeah. So it was really very interesting. And it was once called, I remember some politician referred to it as the last romantic war because it was against a secret society. Oh. You know, I don't know if that's relevant, but that's what and we had this guy, Hickey, came out. He worked for the People. He was a journalist for the People newspaper, and he took the pipes and drums playing, and we all had slouch hats like Australians, but Colonel Rose did away with it because we're losing our identity, you know. We normally would have to kill, but so he took the photograph, it was all playing, and here, when we got the paper sent out, some of us got the paper from our mothers and fathers, and it said, "Is this fighting the Mau Mau? This is us all playing." This was after being entertained in the officer's mess, got the best of everything, he turned the tables. And Colonel Rose was furious about that. Yeah. But I believe I don't think he really meant that. He was trying to draw the public, I think.
Mm-hmm. Where did you come back to?
I came right back to Queen's Barracks.
Queen's Barracks. And that was in 1952?
No, that was 1954.
1954?
Yeah.
And that was the end of your national service?
That was the end of national service, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what did you do after that?
Well, you were obliged to take up the TA. But by this time, it was costing them so much to discipline people to come. Some people were artists and they grew beards. That wasn't allowed. Some people had to travel with their job, travel and sail, and so they gave it up. They just thought, "Well, if you come, they come, and that's it." So I was made a Lance Corporal Piper. And the RSM at the time was the famous Rob Roy of Tobruk, Piper of Tobruk. He was the RSM. So he came up to my mother. I hadn't been back because I was so busy looking for a job. But he said, I want Harry back, he said, because he's an excellent Piper, and I'll make him a Lance Corporal. So I was in the TA then. But
which battalion?
4/5 in Dundee, Bell Street. Perhaps you remember that. And I had to go away out to town because the job was scared. I worked in Duke, you see, an engineer. So I had to leave and I went to Manchester. You could just leave the TA at that time because of your job. I came back and they took me in again and made me pipe major, which was good. A good job, you know.
How long were you pipe major in the 4/5?
About 3 years. Mm-hmm.
You enjoyed that?
Oh, it was terrific, yeah. And the band came up to a good standard. And I stepped down and let an older man who'd been in the Blackwater, I stepped down to let him become the pipey. more experienced than me. So
as a piper, you mean pipe major?
Pipe major, yeah. And he won a lot of prizes because he's more experienced than me, so won an awful lot of prizes, and the colonel was quite strong. But there was one incident I remember when we were ready to go to camp, and we were at a contest in Camden Park in Dundee, and we were late because we waited for the results, and there was no band to play the battalion away. So we nipped down on the train, we were sitting and playing cards in the compartment, and the colonel came down his dressing room and opened the door and he said, "Where the hell are you?" And the pipe said, "We won a prize, sir." And not mind that, because there was nobody to pipe the battalion down. But I think by that time the TA was ready to move into a new phase when it disbanded it and started it up again. You know, it's modern times with the modern idiom, you know.
So looking back on your and when did you come out of the TA?
About 63.
I see. And from then onwards, you've been a civilian.
I've been a civilian. I was asked to come back to there was a famous band in Perth that was the RAMC, I think it was, and they were winning everything. So they asked me to come back.
And who asked you to come back?
The pipe major
of
the RAMC band.
Right.
And I thought, well, I didn't see how they could have a pipe band. It didn't seem right. No.
And when you look back on those years, is it with a feeling of certain nostalgia that you enjoyed your time?
Oh, terrific, so yeah. I wouldn't go back. I had a rough time. Sergeant Howe, when I was training, he gave a few of us a rough time. You always thought you got paranoid a bit. But looking back now, you can't make soldiers into Boy Scouts. You've got to have the early discipline. Mm-hmm. And indeed, so a lot of guys went from the Black Watch, the basic training, went to some course because they were a wee bit superior in intellect or education. Some of them went to the education corps, SAS, but it wasn't the thing so much at that time. But I met Sergeant Howe in Kenya, this sergeant, and he was entirely different. He used to be a full ready-made soldier, and he was a great singer. He used to sing in the sergeant's mess. Nice.
Was he in the Black Watch?
Yes, he was my drill instructor. He was my drill instructor, and he was well known in the battalion. Chick Howie, ginger hair, very Scottish looking, very Highland looking, you know, very outstanding. But one of my times on the drill was when on the drill square there was a guy there who was famous in Dundee as a murderer, would you believe? His name was Moan, Sonny Moan, and the name was supposed to be a corruption of Moon. Well, way back they'd been genetically, you know, off the nut sort of thing, and criminally off them. So he was being drilled, and he walked out the barracks. He already had been in the Black Watch, but come in again, and he just threw his rifle down, walked and went into the pub, and had to take about 10 men to get him out of the pub. But he went on to be, he eventually did murders in Dundee, but he was in my squad. You know.
But that didn't influence you, it didn't make you think that this is a terrible lot?
Oh no, no matter where you go, you've got to have the guys like myself who were mild-mannered, I would say, but I was a musician, so I was a bit temperamental, but you had to have the guys who were sort of stiff and very formal and very regimental. But one of the guys I admired very much was a lad called, what's his name? He was a beefeater in the Tower of London, Joe Hubble. Very hardened, and another guy from both of London.
What was his connection to the Black Watch?
He was in the in the first battalion, and I met him and I was on guard with him the first night. He came up. He was at the regimental group, and he was a beef eater after he left the Black Watch. He did the 22 years, I think. And there was another guy from both from the Elephant and Castle, McCulloch, whose father was a Scot. And they were a couple of characters, you know. Really hard men. Probably because of the district they come from, you know, the streetwise.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, tell me, when you think of the Black Watch now, how do you regard it, the regiment?
Oh, daft about it. Everybody gets on being in the house. Well, here's the Black Watch again, but I'm do anything for the regiment, you know.
Do you think of it as a family that you were part of?
Yes. Yes, I do. That's... You used to say the Argylls were like that, but I think the Black Watch is just about as like that too, you know, family. But I would like my son to go in the Black Ones, but he joined the police, Dundee Police. But I'd like to, I've been quite chuffed if he joined. And it's a great family legend.
Well, thank you very much, Henry. That's all very good and very excellent. Thank you.
Thank you very much.